Oh, we're just live? Oh, we didn't have like the song or like the techno intro to come into it. Okay, there we go. What's up? Welcome to episode 55 of Inside the Game. I'm DJ Wheat, joined as always by Pain User, Idra, and In Control. Guys, I apologize that we started late. Imagine that if we could just take every possible technical problem and just put them into a nice little package, wrap a bow on it, have it delivered overnight to your house, and then that's pretty much it. Takes like 12 hours to assemble. That's what's happened leading up to this. But I preface the show, ladies and gentlemen, with how goddamn salty I am right now because of AT&T. Now, I'm sure you're all familiar with our friendly phone carriers. Hey, can we just take a quick survey? Guys, who do you use? Who's your phone carrier? Any?
AT&T.
AT&T.
I have AT&T.
Also, yeah. Greg? What? You're Verizon, aren't you, Pain User?
Comcast.
Okay. So, AT&T has somehow...
Comcast phone?
Yeah. It's like next level shit, man.
What is that?
Oh, wait, you're having phone issues.
Yeah, I'm having phone... All right, so check this out. Every call that originates from the Twitch offices gives them an error message that says, I have blocked their number.
Hmm.
So right now my employer or one of my employers thinks that I hate them because – right? And so you'd think like, well, this must be a really simple problem for AT&T to solve because it's their error message. Oh, no. Oh, no, ladies and gentlemen. They have no fucking clue what is wrong and try to tell me it's a phone issue. So I've been on the phone with AT&T today for about 5 hours. I'd pretty much like to shoot myself. And
wait, have you just tried not blocking everybody that's trying to call you?
particularly the people who employ you.
God, what a jackass.
All right.
AT&T.
Yeah, if I could just block them. All right, yeah. So we are, of course, we have Evil Geniuses Master Cup tonight after this program, which means that okay. The program's not going to run as long as you guys probably want us to. To that I say, tough shit. Call AT&T if you got a problem with it. Word? Let's kick things off. How are you guys doing this weekend?
Call the sponsors.
Exactly. How are you guys doing? What's new? What's good?
Doing well. Today, XCOM came out, so I've been killing esports. Took a day off of StarCraft, playing some XCOM.
Hold on a second, Jeff. Let's be real here. Mm. XCOM is a strategy game, so that's okay.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, I'm kind of just working on my decision-making.
Exactly. Exactly. And don't let anyone tell you any differently. They can all just fuck off. It's a strategy game. So
yeah, it's basically practice. That's what I figured.
Yeah. Uh-huh. If anyone else in the house wants to try it out, you know, it is
right.
Strategy. So, well, XCOM, long-time series. And we watched some streams of it last night. It looks pretty cool, actually. So I might have to be following in your footsteps, buddy. Greg, how about you?
Same thing as always, just been playing StarCraft. The tournaments, I've had like 2 months off. It's really weird. I'm not used to it, but just been practicing and streaming a bunch.
Yeah, I've been watching you stream a lot, including the infamous Ode to Muslim GIF that is now up on the interwebs. Did you see that one yet, Greg?
I avoid the internet.
Okay. Yeah.
Imagine the look on your face with the Muslim triple barracks do on Cloud Kingdom while drinking a monster.
Yeah, he's a fucker.
That's the screenshot. And of course someone took it like the moment you looked over at him.
Like you son of a bitch. I wanted to see what happened after that, but
is the Muslim still on your right, Ray? Or is he on your left now?
Left. I think he's always been on my left.
Wow, that webcam is shitty. It's like
that's pretty bad.
Pain User presented by like
Apple MacBook Pro.
Yeah. You're like Instagram. You're like an Instagram camera. It's weird.
With AT&T service, I'm sure.
I just got noodled. Demoted.
How about you, Pain User?
Not much. I'm actually over at Cygnus and Natagas' house, and we are working on getting things set up for the PG2.
Oh.
The what?
The what?
I didn't
We're gonna run another Heart of the Swarm tournament.
Oh, nice.
Post the first one we ran. Yeah, the first one was a pretty big success for us, and that we're making plans to run another one.
More importantly, hopefully, Jeff, they're going to run it right around the time that the spider mine, the widow mine missile is still in the game to ensure that people indeed use the Heart of the Swarm units, especially the Terrans.
Man. I don't care what anyone said. The Warhound was not removed for balance issues.
Dude, well, you probably are happy. You lost the Warhound, and then you got fucking burrowed shit that regenerates and shoots missiles that kill everything. Great, let's talk about that first. Can we just talk about that one first?
Yeah. You can talk about how no one's playing Heart of the Swarm right now because that thing's so freaking broken.
Is that the general consensus? Because when you watch the videos,
just looks silly.
It just looks freaking silly.
Area of effect, the mine itself is
it's AOE too?
Yeah.
I didn't even know that.
AOE, it's ranged, the missile shoots fast, there's no way to kill the missile itself. You just make a line of them, and you're guaranteed to do just ridiculous amounts of damage. Like, what were they thinking? What did they think that was going to add to it? It's like a mobile burrowing fucking land hitting and detecting and air hitting missile turret. It's like a missile turret on crack that can move a fucking round. Like what are they thinking?
It's called unstable payload. And let me tell you, for being unstable and being the best fucking DPS output that Terran has, that's, you know, I think if you're going to call it unstable payload, there should be a 60% chance that it accidentally targets your units and blows them up.
At least does friendly fire damage.
How about that?
I would like that.
Yeah, right? Right? So it does 160 damage to a single target and 40 splash damage.
Ridiculous.
Now, that doesn't, you know, when you have one of them, it doesn't seem like that big of a deal. But if you watch, like, some of the videos of guys with, like, seven of them.
Oh, yeah.
It's kind of like having a lot of little nukes.
And I don't know why you'd only have seven. I'd make 30 of them, personally.
I'd make 40 of them. I still stand by this, though. I mean, it doesn't make any sense from, like, even deeper of a level, because they removed the Warhound. I know everybody likes to think it was because of balance issues, but I feel like they would have just nerfed the Warhound further if it was just a balance thing, you know? They would have reduced its move speed, its damage, its range. They could have tinkered with the Hellfire salvo. But I feel like they removed the Warhound because it clearly wasn't fitting with the way that they wanted Terran to play out in Heart of the Swarm or whatever.
And now they've given you this.
They basically re-add the rocket salvo, but somehow blend it into the Widow Mine, which wasn't working either.
Was so that AOE, like, though?
No,
it wasn't.
Okay.
Really. But it's like we've got to give Terran some sort of a rocket salvo ability.
I mean, I don't.
They don't have enough rockets. We need more rockets.
Andra, have you played against this at all?
I still haven't played Heart of the Storm since the patch where they moved the Warhounds, but I saw the videos of it, and it's like, if a hatchery goes up next to it, it just one-shots the hatchery, and then if you have multiple of them against an army, the army just kind of gets obliterated. I'm not sure why they're moving away from, like, the actual concept of a mine, because that's not a mine anymore. It's a little turret, like Jeff said. And the mines are actually a really cool concept that came from StarCraft 1 Terran. And, like, if they would just try and make it a good thing instead of changing it completely. I don't know why they did this or where they're going with it. It's obviously going to have to change. It's just stupidly overpowered. But I don't know why they're trying to move away from the mine, because that in itself is a pretty good concept. They're just bad at implementing it.
Yep.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think also, like, one of the things that was so fun about Brood War was the sheer quantity of mines. The fact that each vulture had three mines, and you could lay these intricate, huge minefields and try and get this, like, you know, World War II-esque sort of feeling of laying minefields all over the map. But I don't know why they limit the Widow Mine so much, why you have to produce a single mine out of a factory as opposed to have a unit that can drop multiple mines. I thought that was an awesome concept.
Yeah. Jeff, do you have something you want to say about that?
I mean, I guess just the overarching concept that really bothers me is that I got completely demotivated to play StarCraft II Heart of the Swarm when the Warhound was so ridiculous.
Right.
Like, it was just a generic made gameplay very boring. I mean, we heard all our complaints about it, so they removed it. And then immediately after, they implement another thing that's just an absolute no-brainer. There's no drawback whatsoever to the mine. It's insanely cost-effective. It exponentially becomes better and better as you know you add more and more of them. Like it's insane. It's really dumb. And I guess what's kind of discouraging for me is that it's been dumb since they've put it in, and it's been out for what, like 2 weeks now. There's nobody out there that's saying, there's no fucking top Reddit thread that's called in defense of the Widow Mine. You know what I mean? Like there's that thread does not exist. Nobody
You're
does
right.
that.
It doesn't.
And when you have like a lot of the Terrans that are playing Harvest Swarm suspiciously quiet right now, that's when you know something's completely fucking broken. If they're not complaining about everything, then the game's imbalanced in favor of Terran right now.
And, you know, a lot of people in chat say it is beta. And fair enough. It's obviously an argument that I feel like you have to make. The whole point of this is to try out shit that obviously is not going to be in retail. But to your point, Jeff, there becomes a point, right, where you're like, okay, we're all playing Heart of the Swarm because of the newness of it. Okay, we realize there's some issues. Okay, now this is just sheer bullshit, so I'm not going to play it. So what's the motivating factor that brings you back in? And I'm not saying that, like, a single overpowered unit is going to push everyone away, but I guarantee you there will just be people that will be like, well, it is a beta, and I don't really want to have to mess with this shit, so whatever. I'll just wait till much later or wait till retail. You know, it might have an adverse effect because it is so drastic of a change. You know, how many people actually bounce back for that? It's a completely speculative question asking for a speculative answer, but, you know, something to think about, right?
Yeah, it's tough because I actually, and I know Greg did too, I quite enjoyed Heart of the Swarm when it was first out, and of course the Warhound was an issue, but I like the newness of the units I like. I know that it's the beta. Of course they're going to have bad ideas, and of course they're going to have good ideas, and there's going to be a period of time with both. I guess for me, because there still is really nice Wings of Liberty tournaments, especially with MLG, you know, a month away, the motivation to play a game where I absolutely fucking know that the Widow Mine's not going to remain that way, it feels like a gigantic waste of time. It feels like, why would I ever spend time practicing a game where the Terran dynamic is completely mutilated, right? That's what I felt like with the Warhound. I knew it wasn't going to stay, so every time I play a Terran that does one factory, one racks expand, and then Lol stomps me as I'm trying to do the same kind of thing with their like three Hellion, their three Warhounds, I looked at that and I was like, I'm wasting time right now. This is stupid. Why would I do this? And I feel like that's the same with this. So yes, it's the beta. A lot of people find that really fun, but for the competitive players, I can see them moving away from Heart of the Swarm for the time being, because there's enough reason to stay with Wings of Liberty, but then you also couple that with the fact that there's things going on in Heart of the Swarm right now that will be irrelevant in a month.
Right.
Yeah, for me, the bigger reason I'm staying away from Heart of the Swarm is just because of the Wings of Liberty tournaments. Like, I would be playing Heart of the Swarm if it weren't for WCS and Dallas coming
right
up. But also, like, none of the Zerg matchups were nearly as bad as Protoss vs. Terran was. Like, it was pretty much impossible for Protoss to win in a lot of situations, for any practical circumstances. Zerg wasn't that bad, so I didn't have quite as much room for frustration as Jeff did and other Protoss players did. But yeah, the biggest thing they can do is kind of be more competent. Like, it's okay to mess with the idea of a spider mine, or of, like, the Widow mine in its current iteration. It's okay to mess with the idea of a little moving turret that does what it does. But something that's so obviously broken, like, putting that in, that just makes the game worthless. Like, it's not hard to tell that it is broken, that it's too good. Like, everyone who plays
right.
it, everyone who even sees a video of it, they know it's too good. It can't be like that. And I don't know what prevents Blizzard from seeing that before they implemented it and just putting in a lesser version of it. Because then the game is actually playable. We're still testing out the new concept. You still tweak things because things will be broken. Things will be a little bit too good. But they don't have to be stupidly too good when you put them in to get an idea of how the game's going to work. And it just makes it pointless to play.
Agreed. Were you going to say something, Pain User?
I was going to say, yeah, I totally agree. For me, it's like I was playing a ton of Heart of the Swarm, then Warhound gets removed, so things are kind of back to mission control. Then you know, they add this thing to the Widow Mine, which is pretty interesting. But that being said, when you introduce something that powerful, something clearly that powerful that just completely alters the way the game is played, it's like the metagame just completely shifts topsy-turvy every time they implement some sort of a change. And it's like, if you're going to be practicing that and try and get some sort of stable build or some sort of stable gameplay, it doesn't really work. And I think another thing that would get a lot more players interested is if they can somehow find a way to get the buzz around the beta to be like, you know, oh, this is so exciting. Have you seen this awesome new unit that they've implemented that has these really cool abilities, as opposed to every time you hear something new, it's like, oh, look at this unit they just implemented. This is so freaking OP. It just completely breaks the matchup. And I think if they can sort of find a balance and maybe make less impactful changes, then maybe they could get some good buzz, some good hype going around it. But everything all the pro players hear from everybody else is just all negative and all, you know, OP, completely breaks the matchup. So right. Nobody's really interested in investing time and actually, you know, figuring stuff out.
As a closing thought, I do agree with you in regards to something like that, whether it be, you know, on the extreme like Jeff was talking about, can have that effect on, you know, on that sort of beta metagame and could potentially, you know, prevent Blizzard and or the people who analyze that kind of data from seeing the full picture. So obviously they've got a ton of time. It's not like this one beta patch is going to completely, you know, make this shit go belly up, but it is kind of funny because we will look back and we will watch those videos of three spider minds fucking demolishing like 30 broodlords, and I don't know what it is about the other race's ability to just completely decimate broodlords off of the face of the map, but it continues. The plight of the Zerg continues. I want to talk a little bit about, I want to talk a little bit about this. Rain. I mean, right now this covers the OSL and it kind of covers potentially the GSL Code S round of four. Let's start with that one because Rain versus MVP is tonight.
Ooh, I know.
And of course, Rain comes off of the win against Last.
Last.
In the OSL, who of course is also Terran, and you know MVP. Pretty much certifiable badass when it comes to the GSL, but we had the discussion many moons ago about, you know, the first Vanjois of StarCraft II, and will we ever see someone like winning multiple titles at the same time? Yeah. And out of nowhere, here's a situation where it absolutely could happen. And I mean, not only is it intriguing, but the fact that this is Rain's first entry into GSL, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. So. I want to talk a little bit about this and what you guys think.
The crazy thing to me is that also not only coming off that win off of Hero, just absolutely trouncing Hero in those PvPs, making it look so easy. And Hero is an incredible. I mean, Protoss versus Protoss isn't Hero's strongest matchup. He has struggled there from time to time, but still, you know, Rain's play against him looked phenomenal for a player with his breadth of experience to be able to come in there and just absolutely dominate a player like Hero. It makes me so excited for these games coming up with MVP. I can't wait to see it tonight. I think MVP definitely has a leg up in the experience category. You know, he has a lot of tricks under his sleeve. Obviously he's having the wrist problems, the pinched nerves. So, if Rain is able to take it into those super lengthy macro games and really push MVP to his limits, I think we're going to have some really interesting games on our hands. But yeah, Rain, man, I mean, he's just looking like an absolute monster. He's just destroying everyone in his path. And I think Artosis put it very succinctly when he said his understanding of the math behind the different matchups, especially in Protoss versus Protoss, like, we saw him against Hero in the late game start throwing away tons of probes and zealots, sacrificing probes and zealots in order to just max out even heavier on Colossus and Archon. And that's something that you don't see from every player even now.
Right.
And, you know, it's just little things like that that kind of let you know that this guy's a really special player. And the sky's the limit for Rain, man. And MVP is amazing, too. So it's like it's just going to be a, you know, Goliath versus Goliath matchup tonight.
As we've had Protoss superstars sort of, you know, come onto the scene as of late, but Rain, probably the most recent and definitely like an out of nowhere, right? I mean, in regards to their performance in StarCraft II overall. Jeff, I come to you with this question. You know, what are your thoughts on Rain and the fact that, you know, when was the last time that we just saw another ProDOS just kind of like, boom, hey guys, did you know that I'm here and I'm fucking good at this game?
I think it's interesting that, in my opinion, Rain is actually the biggest argument for that quote-unquote elephant in the room. Like, Flash, certainly very good. Jadong, certainly very good. But Rain in Brood War was a very good player, don't get me wrong, but he was not a multi-GSL, hundreds of thousands of dollars in salary type player. Yet, he is cutting through the competition seamlessly. I know he had a Cumber Pine win against, well, 30 out of, I guess, sorry if this is a spoiler to people, but against last night.
Right.
And then now, he's making the absolute best in terms of the StarCraft II pre-Kespa guys, which is kind of a weird thing to say because, well, anyways, the guys that were here before them, he's making them look like warm butter to his hot knife. And he is fallible. I think he can be defeated. I don't think he's some kind of untouchable god. And I think of the people that could beat him, to be brutally honest, it's actually MVP, which I think could be really unfortunate. I think if MVP is on the other side of the bracket, these two probably meet in the finals. But I think this is going to be one of the best semifinals we've ever had, just because this is right now the best Protoss player on the planet going up against a guy who just fucking wins in any way, shape, and form. He outsmarts his opponents. He takes the better risks. He takes the non-risks. He plays the best damn series of StarCraft II you could ever see in MVP, and it's absolutely stunning. And on the other side, I think Rain should take care of business and go through MVP. I think Tejas should win on his side, and that's going to be an amazing finals. But as far as Rain's concerned, he really carries with him that swagger that the actual Brood War pros had. He just seems to do everything right, and he does it better. And he's also thinking a little bit outside the box, like the stuff that Taylor was talking about, but not so much so. He's not reinventing the wheel. It's not like he's massing 12 minutes or something like that. He's just doing what we all know to do, but he's adding the concepts at places where people weren't doing them.
Greg.
I think it's actually really unfortunate for Rain that he had to play MVP second at these two matches, because if there's one thing that MVP and SD, particularly MVP, does incredibly well is prepare for matches and analyze his opponent. And he just got to see, I think it was 7 games against last, he got to see 3 losses and 4 wins. So, like, Rain put a lot out there last night, and MVP is just going to study that. His coach is going to say, yeah, they're going to look at that. And MVP can come in and out mind game you pretty easily, even if he doesn't have anything really to go on. He's just very, very good at preparing for series. And with that additional information, and the fact that Rain hasn't been exposed to him as much as a lot of the other players he has, I think MVP has a massive, like, lead going into it strategically and in terms of the mental portion of the game. I think that's going to be huge. And if anyone can take advantage of that, it's MVP. I think that's going to push Rain really, really hard. But he is an incredibly good player. He hasn't played against Zerg, like, at all, so I haven't actually seen that much of his play. But what I have, he's just very smart, very solid mechanically. There's nothing, like both Jeff and Taylor said, there's nothing mind-boggling about him. He's not doing anything weird, which is actually pretty scary, because there's not a lot to take advantage of. He's just going to do things really well and not let you take advantage of them. That's kind of what he does. And also one of Jeff's points, I think he's actually kind of disproof of the whole elephant in the room thing, because he wasn't a big OSL player. He wasn't a big StarCraft 1 player. He's gone miles ahead of anything he's done in StarCraft 1 already in StarCraft 2. And that's kind of proof that it's just more individual talent and aptitude for the different kinds of games that are what make you good. Like,
I could agree with that.
Yeah, he's outperforming all the people who everyone would expect to come over. Just the fact that he has that Kespa tag on him, the fact that he hasn't switched over till now, doesn't mean that he is all of a sudden lumped in there with Flash and Jadon. He was a very different caliber of player, and now he has surpassed them at the new game because he has talents that are more specifically attuned to StarCraft 2 than to StarCraft 1, and they're the other way around.
He's still competing at a very high level in Brood War 2, though. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, he was a pro gamer, but he was the same kind of pro gamer that, like, MVP and Nesty and all of the other ones were. Like, he was nothing special. Maybe got into his own cell.
He's
by his
son, right?
Yeah, from SKT1.
Here's a mind fuck. I actually used to practice with that guy.
That's awesome. Like,
he was 12 years old at the time. Seriously, what fuck?
I mean, anyone want to throw some general thoughts over? This is, of course, a big what if, and getting past MVP is nothing. So this is small speculation. But to reach finals in two different competitions, You know, first off, shit, that's hard, especially considering a lot of the talent that are in both of these competitions. But, I mean, is there a better way to come out of the gates, like, or coming out of your corner swinging? You know, I don't know. Any thoughts on that? Like, if we see him in both finals, what do you think that means?
Well, he's the big story. I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves because I don't know. If someone were to give me even equal odds on MVP versus Rain, I would probably take MVP, as ridiculous as that sounds. I've learned from not voting against MVP. And Rain is certainly the biggest story because he's on the golden path with two different tournaments, and that's absolutely phenomenal and amazing. But I think there's a very good chance that he doesn't get past MVP, in which case I hope we don't rely on him being in two finals for him to be amazing, because he is playing the best Protoss right now, bar none.
Yeah.
I'd agree with that, but I do agree with Jeff. I think MVP is pretty likely to be in. MVP just kind of wins in these situations. Like the season where Protoss was destroying everything, Protoss was 100% supposed to win. MVP was not playing well. He was not up to his standards at all.
Yeah.
He just goes through and beats everyone. Like, when it gets to this kind of situation, no one's better than him. But Rain does, like, he not only has the skill, but he came back from an 0-3 and a best of 7. Last night. He has a mental game too. He can compete on a big stage under pressure. So he's not going to roll over and die, but I think MVP is just going to take it because he's MVP.
And like another thing, MVP can throw, like we mentioned, everything but the kitchen sink at you. So we're going to really he'll throw the kitchen sink at you too. We've got to see what sort of aptitude Rain has for adapting to these different styles, because, you know, I mean, MVP can throw, you know, tank, marine, marauder, siege tank timing pushes at him. He can throw one base all-ins at him. He can throw, you know, pure bio macro at him. I mean, there's so many different styles that he can utilize. So 2 racks, 3 racks, 4 racks, no gas. I mean, so many different options. So we'll have to see, you know, how good Rain really is at adapting in the TVP matchup. And we definitely haven't seen his aptitude for that against a player of MVP's caliber. So I think that's really what it's going to boil down to is how well he can adapt, to what MVP throws at him. We'll just have to see.
I'm also just going to throw out there, I mean, somewhat related to just the GSL finals in general, but I'm probably going to have at least a 45% reduction in interest in the finals if it ends up being a TVT. Like, I don't know that I'm going to be able to take it, you know?
I don't think you're alone in that.
Yeah.
Especially with GSL. Like, we're a long ways away from the... Remember the first, like, 6 GSLs or whatever it was that had, like, 4 or 5 TVTs, and they were all blowouts, and they were terrible? We're a ways away from that. But still, TVT to this day, it's a fun matchup. It's definitely better than it ever has been, in my opinion. But you can't compete with a PVT or a TVC or something like that.
Certainly. I will go on record and just saying I will be a biased son of a bitch and hope that it's not a TVT. But, you know, that means that a lot of shit would have to happen for that. So,
come on, guys. You don't want to go back to GSL TVT?
I No, I don't. Not particularly.
It's not all Terran top 4. We've already improved.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about MLG MVP. Idra, you're playing in this right now, and we haven't really had a chance to talk with you about it, how it's gone, what you think about it, you know, talk about it from a player's perspective. I have watched a couple of evenings. I think I watched the opening night. It's certainly interesting to see the, the non-Pro League players, I guess, playing the Pro League players. But as someone who's actively participating in it, you want to maybe give us the 411 on that?
It's actually pretty terrible. First off, they sent us the information like a day before the event started, and everything was delayed a week, which we found out via MLG Lee tweeting at Kawhi Rice, which was pretty terrible. And there's like one or two admins on every night for the matches when half the people, there's like 64 players and half of them don't speak English. It's all pretty poorly run. and they didn't announce the prize distribution, if you can call it a distribution, until like a day or two before the event, my knowledge. And it turns out it's only 10,000 for first, and you get seeding into the event, but we also have all the online qualifiers and stuff, which will be much easier
into the championship event, right?
Into MLG Dallas, yeah.
Right.
So we're spending like 3 hours a night, and it's also all cross-server for everyone. It's all cross-server, one game on each server, which is super frustrating, and it kind of invalidates the games. I took the event because we didn't know there would be all those problems for the first place, but also because I just really wanted to play the Kestrel players. They're like the people I respected a ton in StarCraft 1. I was excited about the opportunity to play them, but, you know, cross-server games, I just kind of underestimated how much that bothers me because I've avoided it so much. I'm really sad I'm playing it, actually. Plus, it's pay-per-view, so they're getting, like, maximum 2,000 viewers. I think it was 2,000 me versus Flash, and otherwise it's pretty low, so no one really sees it. You don't get that much exposure anyway. Overall, it's pretty terrible.
I mean, we've talked about online leagues. We've talked about online leagues casting from replays. We've talked about online leagues live, and everyone's sort of gone a different direction. I think a lot of people initially sort of commended MLG for going, this is great, at least you're not going to necessarily do it by replays, and that is accurate, right? It's not replay. You guys do it live.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Oh, it is?
It's replays.
My bad. My bad on that.
Wait, what were you saying?
I thought it wasn't replay, and I was like, man, they kind of went for it, but it still isn't working out, but it sounds like it is anyway. Which,
yeah, but what's
the
your backup? What's the other good things you can...
I got nothing, man. I got nothing. I wanted to ask about the cross-server play.
It's really 20. Terrible. Oh, yeah. It's one game for NA versus Korea. It's one game on each server. For EU versus Korea, I think everything's played on NA. I'm not positive about that. But, yeah, I don't know. If you want to look for a silver lining, it is really cool to get the Kestrel players, get to see the Kestrel players play. It's kind of cool to get to play them, but I despise cross-server, and our internet at the house has been pretty bad, as anyone who tries to watch a stream has known, so that's just exacerbating it. I hate cross-server play. It's just, it invalidates everything. It makes it all silly.
Can I try to make it sound positive?
Sure.
Can I throw a positive?
Right,
it doesn't
things.
Have extended series?
Sweet. You know, right, you dicked around. We started 20 minutes late because you and Scott were just tiptoeing around. I'm just kidding. Scott's going to kill me for that, actually. Cause he doesn't like jokes like that. That didn't happen, Internet. That's not why we were late. My positive spin on this would be that this is the first effort, kind of MLG to do something where they're trying to actually raise like the North American platform specifically.
Yeah.
By having more North American invites, they are recognizing the value in having like a daily show so that there's more of a storyline going on, there's more content being put out there. Of course, this isn't altruistic. It's also being proven through NASL in particular that this is a very good model. This is something that can get you a lot of exposure for very little. They moved Axeltoss and Axelab to New York, and then they use their studio that they already have to produce content that they are hosting online. It's very inexpensive on their end. The problem for me outside of that is that, well, obviously everything Greg said. I mean, two games and like one on each server is like supposed to be the epitome of fair, but in my opinion, I think it'd be really funny if they released the win percentages of home server from the players, because I bet it would be something like 75 plus. You know, you win 75% of your home
that
server
sucks
games.
That sucks, too.
Yeah.
And that's not MLG's fault. That's fucking Blizzard. But the problem I have with this is all the smokes and screens, or whatever the fuck, however you say it.
Smoke and mirrors?
Yeah, something like that. Some combination of those things. The point is, I think the entire league, for me, it's not intriguing. Like, I haven't bought a pass. I don't really intend. I followed the results a little bit, but as the season has gone on, I've lost more and more interest because the games seem to get more and more illegitimate as the season drags on. Like, a lot of people are dropping out. A lot of players have lost interest. And unfortunately, in an online event where only one person wins, once you start losing, there's absolutely, like, the only motivation for these players is to look good. But when they're, like, you know, 2-8 and they're getting laughed at anyways, they just kind of, they stop even showing up or even playing. That's one of the issues that we're having. So the positive is that they tried this. The negative is the result. The third thing is where I hope they're going with this. I hope they improve upon it. I hope they don't drop it. Because it would be kind of cool to have some combination of Koreans and non-Koreans competing on a regular basis through MLG. MLG is a great company. They do great things. But this is not one of the great things that they've done.
Yeah, for sure. So I think also it
it's just such a huge, just from the game psychology aspect of it, it's such a huge factor to know that you're playing with that kind of ping differential going into it off the get-go. It's just, it's like hamstringing yourself, you know, before the match. And you, when you're playing for money and when you're playing for prestige on a platform like MLG, I mean, there's so much on the line that I think you just can't really do that. It's not, I don't think it's fair to the players in a lot of respects.
Yeah, another thing about that is, like, a lot of people kind of just cheese when they're on the foreign server. Like, when the Koreans play on NA, then they just do a proxy 2x or something. And when foreigners are on Korea, then they just all in as well. So you get pretty shitty game quality. And like Joe said, it'd be awesome if we could actually see foreigners and Koreans compete online regularly, but just you're always going to have this problem. It's always going to be silly, shitty games because you have cross-server latency, thanks to Blizzard.
I do want to say, too, though, because MLG usually produces such great content, I believe they should be held accountable for this kind of stuff. It's absolute horseshit to announce anywhere within 2 or 3 weeks of a competition what your prize distribution is going to be. That to me is like WCG level dishonesty. That's especially when it's surprise. It's winner takes all, which is the irregular prize distribution. If it was like surprise, top 8 get picked out, then you'd have like 2 Europeans, including Cloud, making a blog where they're like, "I believe it should be top 12. Anything else is just ridiculous." But for the most part, every other human being on the planet would be like, okay, top 8, that's great. But when you do just one guy wins the entire thing, you're like, oh, so when you said $10,000, you were actually being kind of a bitch about that, weren't you? You were just trying to you're trying to put a bigger number on a smaller tournament. Because imagine if they're like, and in first place for $1,500, Flash! And Flash is like, you know, he like waves into the West End. Thank you. It was really fun. It lasted for 5 weeks.
And then he pulls out a lighter and some fucking lighter fluid, and he just puts it in a pile, like, and lights it on fire.
That is another point. It's like a massive time investment. I think it's averaging 2 days a week with at least 3 hours a night, and the Koreans are usually late. And it's supposed to be a walkover time, but of course that's not enforced. So. It's a massive time sink for a tournament where 99% of people aren't going to make money.
Yeah, for sure.
Or get anything out of it. And especially given this pay-per-view, so they're not getting the exposure either.
Very true.
It's kind of silly.
Very true.
All right. Interesting. Well, if you'd like, you can find out more either on the Team Liquid Wiki, the MLG versus Pro League Invitational, or MajorLeagueGaming.com itself. Opinions, do you have any final thoughts about the MVP before we move on to a new topic?
About MVP?
Yeah. Thoughts about the competition, the MVP, not about...
The MVP from MLG, I mean... Yeah, I agree with everything that was said. I think not a lot of people are purchasing passes. I think that it's detracted from the overall excitement of the whole event. Especially with the pay-per-view only model. I think that's probably not the best idea with a show match series of this sort. The players aren't going to get the promotion. They're not going to show their best games. And what Greg mentioned is definitely something that I've seen quite a few times, is that Korean players oftentimes, when playing with that sort of ping, they will actually, you know, just do straight up cheesy builds that don't require that much micro.
Right.
You know, they'll kind of contour their play around the fact that they have that sort of latency issue. And sometimes it just doesn't make for the greatest games. So I think a few kinks to be worked out. Definitely offer some sort of way to view the stream for free. I think that's just almost a must in esports right now. You've got to have some sort of a low quality stream for free. And then, you know, the people who do get into it and who do enjoy the production and the product will definitely purchase an HD pass. I know I do whenever I'm into a tournament or a show or anything like that, I'll definitely purchase the HD pass. So I think that's definitely the model that works that they should go with, but we'll see what they do with it.
Yeah, I mean, they still have several weeks left to go in this competition. Of course, it leads into MLG Dallas, but this also, as far as I know, takes the place of any arena that would have taken place this month as well. So that's, you know, one less content piece they're going to have, but ongoing, as you said. So, all right, moving on. probably the most unhype event is happening this weekend. Unhyped event is happening this weekend as WCS Asia. I'm not quite sure why people aren't necessarily talking about it, but it is happening this weekend. It has representation from Korea, China. I'm going to have to look at the rest of them.
Taiwan,
thank you. And
I think all of Southeast Asia goes.
Thailand
there, right?
And the Philippines.
Australia, right? Where is Australia going?
Yes.
Actually, whoever qualified from the Southeast Asian one would go. So I don't know who that was.
Singapore. Taiwan. Yeah.
Red Archon, man. BlizzCon. Never forget.
Never forget. That happens this weekend. I think that it's probably looking to be a Koreans tournament. But yeah. I mean, considering the amount of hype that came out of WCS Europe and how excited everyone was and what was going, like...
Wait. Are you saying people get more excited about foreigners playing than...
I don't know. I mean, I'm just... I'm wondering why... This is almost not on anyone's radar.
Jeff is telling you why.
You could be onto something. This is my God.
That's
like,
it.
It's almost like people don't like seeing. No, I can't.
Well, Korea ran a legit qualifier for it, which means that a bunch of Koreans who no one really has any emotional attachment to got through because that's just the way Korean qualifiers work.
Like, Never rain, mofo. Rain.
Yeah,
there's
a couple of big storylines, but overall, it's kind of your generic nameless Korean, like really, really good, but not a big fan base, so no one really hypes it up. Me personally, I'm really interested to see the Chinese players, since Brood War, the Chinese players have always been like an enigma. Everyone knows that they're really hardcore into esports, and they practice a lot, and they're kind of touted as mini Koreans, but you never get to see them play because of latency issues and visa issues for tournaments.
Yeah.
So whenever you do get to see them, they're either amazing or they're terrible. I remember the IEM I went to, they were really hyped up and they sucked. But then they've been to other events, and they like that Zigwa guy, I think he got second in WCG and kind of just destroyed everyone.
Yep.
So they're always really exciting to watch. There's a few big names from other Chinese esports in there, like Infi, I forget who else. Jim.
Max Zed.
Since the beginning. Max Zed, yeah.
And then Seth. Just got one of the Koreans first round, I think, PvP.
All of them have Koreans first round. It's split up like that, I think.
Are you sure?
I'm looking at the list right now.
I'm not looking at the list, bracket. But I think I'm right.
There's pretty good
odds. Fair enough.
Yeah, take it.
Fair enough.
I'm going to find one that's not. Hang on, so I can just be right for a second. Zai versus Huey.
Okay. Well done.
Told you, Greg. You're right, though. It is all Koreans actually mixed up in there. Ender is he's like from the Philippines, I believe. So that's kind of interesting. Parting versus Max Zed. That's Greg's point. Like, if Max Zed can give Parting a fight, then that's freaking amazing.
Yeah.
On paper, he shouldn't, right? He just absolutely should not. Because Parting is absolutely on fire right now. F91, big Brood War player. We don't see shit from him right now. So it's going to be kind of cool to see what he's up to. And I'm really excited for Nylon versus Bai Sun, man. Fucking Nylon's so good.
Tudeming was actually a Brood War pro caster too, who a lot of the Chinese players say is like really, really good. Or
really?
Like that community says he's really good, but obviously no one's ever seen him, so we have no idea.
Yeah.
Does anyone know who's casting this? I mean, I assume there's going to be English coverage.
Yeah.
Artosis, Rob
awesome.
Simpson, Grubby, and Jarasar.
Interesting.
Oh, there we go. Right on. Cool.
Well, there you have it.
Yeah. That's this weekend.
So, Wheat, just so you know, you've done an equitable job of hyping this up as everybody else has now.
Yeah.
Who's casting? You're like, cool. Okay. So, I mean, check that out if you got some time or something.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. What do you want me to say, Jeff? Like, yeah! Fuck yeah, man!
Artosis is casting?
What's up, bitches?
The knowledge.
There is Asian finals.
No one saw
and
any
who
of
else
that.
Casting
because...
Grubby? Again. And then who else is casting? Jarasar? Who's that? No, I'm just kidding. He's a nice guy. I know that guy.
He's a good guy.
He's a British guy that casts in a suit while sitting at the foot of his bed.
Yeah, he does. He's like, he comes.
Oh, that guy.
He comes dressed for the occasion all the time.
Suit casting's rough.
It is rough. It is
hot and sweaty.
I don't know what the offset is going to be for the actual times that this is going to be broadcast, but it literally is 2 days. So the 13th and the 14th. And that will be this weekend.
Okay. Well, tune in, guys. It's going to be great.
I feel like some fireworks should be going off behind me or some shit. Like, I don't know.
Volcanoes exploding.
I don't know. Again, like, I know there was that moment where, like, Blizzard, WCS, you're up, like, holy shit. And then it's like, oh, yeah, WCS Asia Finals this weekend.
Well, a lot of it comes down to not only the players, but the event. Like, the DreamHack guys in Europe.
They totally tore it up.
Yeah,
And the big thing was they just hyped it massively. Like, they got everyone excited. MLG didn't really talk about WCS that much. Mm-hmm. And I don't even know who's putting on WCS Asia. I'm not sure if it's Blizzard themselves or what, or if they hired a Chinese company.
Do you even know where it is? It's in China, I guess?
It's in China.
I think it's in China, yeah. But, yeah, there's just, like, no promotion at all going on.
It narrows things down a little bit.
No one's getting people hyped for it.
Is that a Blizzard problem?
Well,
that's an everybody problem. Whoever's putting on an event has the the obligation to get online and to spend exactly $0 typing it up in places. Or, like, if I hire Artosis, if I'm paying that son of a bitch like $15,000 to come cast my tournament, he's talking about it nonstop. He's actually spamming Twitters. He's getting unfollowed by people because he's like, hey, WCS fucking China and Asia is happening this weekend. You guys watching it? And someone's going to write back like, no. And then he tweets back at them a link to the show and says, get on it, you jackass. That's the kind of advertising that people should be encouraging. But I follow our toasts on Twitter. I'm not seeing anything. I'm not seeing, like, where's the Blizzard tweets? I'm sure they have. I mean, some smartass is going to tweet it at me. But the point is, they're not out there enough. I think everyone would agree on that.
Well, I'm over on one of the partners' pages. I believe it's GameFi, like Fly without the L.
Interesting.
Yeah. .cn, and you could see that they've got, in addition to some One Piece tournament that's going on, which I'm interested in now, they've got a full page takeover of the WCS that's going on. I'm familiar with this website. Like, they are obviously embedded in the Chinese gaming scene, but I don't know. Maybe it'll be really big over in China. Right now, shit's kind of big over in China, guys. It's kind of a big deal. This is also where the finals is going to be, too.
That is indeed.
Yeah.
So.
And, like, historically, they have huge turnout for Chinese events. They have some of the best live turnout I've seen ever.
Pressure's on them, too, because they have to follow the tough act of LOL World Finals.
Nice one, Jeff. Throwing daggers. Where was that actually held? Was that, like, in a mall in Los Angeles somewhere? Internet.
It was in LA Live.
Oh, that was at the LA Live?
Yeah.
No way.
Yeah, way.
Was it just live turnout, like anybody could come in and sit down, or was it ticket based?
It was ticket based,
but no one wanted to, so.
You could go into like ESPN Zone, and it was playing on every TV in there too.
Wow. They certainly had a huge online turnout, that's for sure.
They kind of did.
And it was all for you and Rachel, man.
I'm sure that's not the case, but that's fine.
Well, that's why I watch.
well, thanks, Fade Ether. So WCS Asia, I guess we talked enough about that. Talk more about that next week. C joined Team Liquid.
Yep.
Really cool.
Old school legend, man. I used to watch C all the time. He's a really, really good Terran player. Love him.
It's exciting. For me, what it more importantly represents is the Kespa players willing to go outside of their known universe into the strange and hidden unknown. Like, C has always had a relationship with Team Liquid, so it kind of makes sense. And Team Liquid, you know, they have a need for players. They had a couple retire on them. I feel like their squad's getting smaller, you know, almost. I don't really want to throw out names and stuff like that, but it just kind of feels like the people you see in their rotation becomes much more smaller and smaller and specific. So they needed to sign somebody. And when Team Liquid signs somebody, they don't fucking sign a, you know, somebody that's not really that exciting. They always sign someone pretty special, and C absolutely qualifies for that. And I'm super excited about it. He was an absolute monster in Brood War. He didn't win a Star League, right?
No.
He did not win a Star League, but he was always a Pro League big guy.
Right. And he was original young Terran. He was like the first of the 14, 15, 16-year-olds to come on the scene, and then he just absolutely dominated like immediately. The first OSL qualifiers he played, he won the Challenge League over Nalra, and that was back when that was still a thing. And then just dominated his group and barely got stopped by Yellow Ankh when his ZBT was ridiculous. He's been incredible since the start. And the more interesting thing about this for me is that Kespa is actually going to allow their big name players to leave the Kespa teams, which is something I'm kind of surprised about. I mean, I'm sure they had a part in it. I'm sure they brokered the deal or they had to okay it, but they were actually willing to allow it to happen, or someone forced them to be willing to allow it to happen, which is really cool because hopefully it opens up the opportunity for some more of these players to come out to foreign teams. Like, I know we already had N18M Stardust Son, whatever name he uses. He already came out to Light, but he wasn't like a big name player. He wasn't someone that Kespa was likely to hold on to. But C moving is a gigantic deal.
Yeah.
And hopefully we see other stuff like that.
And he's definitely one of the Korean players that, you know, shows a lot more emotion, at least through interviews in the past and stuff. You can kind of get a feel for who he is. He seems like a really friendly guy, has been around Team Liquid forever, and it opens up a lot of awesome possibilities for him. He's going to be able to, you know, travel the world, participate in a lot of foreign events, get a lot of exposure outside of Korea. So I think it's just a really cool thing for him personally, and I think it's a great pickup for Team Liquid. And yeah, as Jeff said, a lot of these retirements and have been really narrowing down their roster, and they've been forced to, you know, repeatedly throw Team Liquid on Tasia's back time and time again. So I think they're now starting to make pickups so that, you know, they can give Tasia a little bit of breathing room, allow him to stretch his back out a little bit and get some other powerhouse players. You know, they've got Hero, Tasia now, C. They're going to start building a lineup that can really compete at the top level in all the team leagues.
Just based off of, you know, Greg, I guess I direct this question to you. You know, based off of, you know, you've watched C play, you know his background, very familiar with him. Do you expect him to find success in StarCraft II? Or by your prediction, like, where do you see C kind of fitting in?
To me, he's like a Terran version. It's kind of weird to say a Terran version because there's lots of Terran players specifically like this. But to me, he's like a Terran version of Jadon with a bit of a mindset issue. Like, he had problems competing on a big stage. Sometimes he would run into a roadblock. Like, pretty much every OSL where he made a deep run, he'd get knocked out in the round of eight. That was like his thing. He was called round of eight Terran. So he has that. But he's incredibly good mechanically. He's not going to blow anyone away strategically. He's not going to do anything cool and mind-blowing. So it might take him a little while to get used to the game, and he's not going to be a big innovator. But once the game is figured out, he has some of the best mechanics. He's a really, really smart player. If you give him a situation where he's familiar with, he's going to do exactly the right thing with it, and he's going to do it really, really well. So he's going to be a great player, but he might adapt pretty slowly to the Heart of the Swarm. That's one fear I'd have with him, just because he's not a particularly innovative player. And I don't think StarCraft II is as well suited to him as Brood War, but he's just a ridiculously talented RTS player. Like, he's going to be good no matter what.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about a couple more things here before we have to wrap up. And I know people are going to be like, what do you mean have to wrap up? You guys just started. But we did start, unfortunately, a little bit late.
If by wrap up you do mean call Go Lust.
I don't even know if that's possible.
It's possible.
I don't know that it's accept us ending an episode without trying to call Go Lust.
Does it look like I have 20 computers in front of me running the production right now? No.
Is this bad?
Oh, I do one episode every 4 weeks, and then when I do, gosh, well, I don't know. It's getting late.
I'll tell you what, on Live on 3,
tomorrow. Love hearing Scott in the background.
I don't know if you guys have time to yell and bitch like old men. I don't think you have time to be fucking cranky about everything and have Slasher bring up shit that doesn't know anything about and then whine about it. I don't think you guys have time for that.
Scoots is the canoodler. He's noodled everybody. What is
that? Wait, why did I get noodled? I didn't say anything.
We've all been noodled.
Yeah. Oh.
That's not fair.
I don't know, man. I'm not running production.
Scoots is canoodling, man. This is ridiculous.
If Goatless calls Sir Scoots, bitch.
Give me your phone number. Put that on the internet.
Yeah,
all right, Goatless.
AT&T at...
Call Sir Scoots. If you don't know his Skype, I'm sure you could figure it out.
Scott Smith at nambla.12221.
Oh, shit. Shit.
Where did you get that picture from?
I don't know where I got
flashing.
That's from PS3ology, man.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Check that video out, by the way. It's on YouTube.
I'll definitely check it out. Fun.
It's one of the best Tom Cruise impressions I've ever seen. It's kind of scary, actually.
Thank you, Jeff. Thank you. Infestors. Apparently people don't like them.
How about them?
Apparently people are like, man, when Zerg makes a lot of Infestors, they start getting really salty. They start saying things that they might regret later on. F-bombs are dropped. F words are dropped.
Fungal bombs.
All sorts of things.
Wait, I just saw Sase's tweet. Is this like a bigger thing that I missed?
Well, I mean, in addition to Select sort of having some words with you, Greg, about the Infestor. And Broodlord's Infestor, I mean. But yes, then Sase also coming out, and you know what that means.
Oh, careful how you end that sentence.
What? Yeah.
Well, I mean,
with
like
Infestor hate.
Yeah, I think Leenok in the GSL is kind of like a prime example to look at for the discussion. He's showing that, you know, Zergs can win from time to time on even base with Protoss, you know, 3-base to 3-base, on even base with Terran, 3-base to 3-base, and he's kind of showing that, you know, Zerg is perceived as, you know, the macro race, always have to be ahead in drone count, always have to be ahead of base or two if you want to be in a good spot. But Leenok has shown time and time again that if he gets that late game Broodlord, Infestor, you know, Crackling, Corruptor comp, that, and Queens as well, he's been mixing in the Queens as well, but he has shown that late game the Infestor is an incredibly, incredibly powerful unit, and you can time and time again trade away energy for units. And pick and choose your battles well, and you can actually win.
Time and time again is a bit of an exaggeration. The amount of times that Zerg has won on even bases without some kind of extenuating circumstances, it can be counted on one hand for big, high-profile games.
Like, Leenok's done it, like, what, three times?
He does it a lot of times when he gets a Terran or a Protoss who's stuck on a mid-game composition. They throw away an army into him. Like, the game against Hero, which I imagine is something that set off a lot of people about this. Obviously, that was pretty silly. But that kind of thing is really rare. Usually what happens when people see something and they feel like it's completely bullshit Infestors, it's a Terran who is going for mid-game timing and they're stuck on Marine Tank Medivac, and that army it doesn't fight against Broodlord Infestor. That is something that's on a clock. You have to kill Zerg or do game-ending damage, take them down to 2 bases, eliminate their tech, eliminate an army, something big. Or you're going to lose because you're playing a style that's not designed to deal with Broodlord Infestor. Whereas if you sit back and you take a 4th base and you go up towards Ravens and Vikings and you get a proper late game army, then you can fight against it just fine. But Terrans and Protosses are used to winning with mid game timing pushes because that worked for so long, and it took Zergs a long time to figure out how to actually defend them, that they're still using those compositions. And now if Zerg defends that, then they're supposed to win because it is essentially an all in. It's a timing. If the timing doesn't work, you're going to be behind. And then Broodlord Infestor is, yes, much better than that army. But Broodlord Infestor isn't much better than armies that counter it.
To an extent, I agree. But I feel like, you know, doing that Raven switch and, you know, getting all the energy required and getting all that together, all the gas required, I think is only really viable on certain maps. Like, you see it work a lot on Metropolis, where you have those 2 chokes, and you're able to, you know, set up PFs and defend the middle of the map fairly easily. But I think it's so much more difficult to get to that sort of late-game Terran mass air on a map like, you know.
If only Terran had a mineral-only unit that was super cost-effective so they could save up that gas for that late-game transition.
Well, Jeff, listen. The Marine with the spider mine missile-shooting fucking jetpack add-on comes out in Heart of the Swarm. So if you can just hold on to your pants until then, we'd appreciate
it. I have a story. Okay, so actually, in actuality, my actual opinion that I'm going to be a smartass, my actual opinion is that the Infestor probably could use some tinkering, but if it ever got any tinkering at all, other aspects of Zerg would absolutely need to be buffed, because while I think at times the Infestor is imbalanced, Zerg without an Infestor is underbalanced or whatever. It's fucking weak. It's terrible. So it's kind of like a force field situation. But now here's my funny story. I watched Greg play StarCraft II a lot, and I found that if you ever want to know how Greg actually feels about something, you wait until he's mad, okay? So I've sat behind him while he's playing ZVZs, and this is my perspective, okay? Greg plays like this. It's kind of weird when I'm looking right at him, actually. But play like this, all right? Then his whole roaches get fungled, and he goes, oh, what the fuck? And that's how I know. He, too, somewhere deep down inside, agrees that Infestors are bullshit.
Oh, no, I have not exactly hid the fact that I think the game's pretty terrible. It's just, like you said, if Infestors were made worse, then something else would have to be better. I don't think it's imbalanced. I just think it's boring as shit and really frustrating. Same way Vortex is, and the same way everything about Terran is, and, you know, yeah.
Word. Are you talking to me? Oh, he's still getting goat-lust ready.
There you go.
Maybe he's talking to AT&T. Yeah, actually, you want to know something else? Here's what happens. Check this out. This is part two of the AT&T story. Okay. So while I'm on the phone, this is like hour three and a half right here. They
tried restarting your router, Wheat?
What?
Have you tried restarting your router?
Yeah, shut up. So here we go. So I'm on the phone that we're trying to troubleshoot. So they're like, oh, sir, do you have a landline maybe that we could call? Because, you know, this is the 21st century when no one has a fucking landline. But actually, Sir Scoots happens to have one. So I'm like, yes, believe it or not, there's a landline. So the lady calls me and I'm outside on the phone, like pacing like a motherfucker. And the phone starts beep, 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 like it's out of batteries. And I'm like, oh, Christ. Like, you know, so I go inside. I put it on the cradle. I'm on speaker. And the lady puts me on hold. So I'm here. I'm like, you know, I'm like crying into my hands. And Scoots walks in. He walks past me into the kitchen. And you know what he does? He like looks over. He sees that the phone's on, but no one's talking. So Wheat must have left it on. And he's like, bloop.
Oh no.
And he turned it off. Thankfully.
You know what that is?
Thankfully.
You know what that is?
Yeah.
You're not painting the picture correctly. Sir Scoots walks into his immaculate dust-free kitchen, past his zero dish, zero water sink, notices a light on a phone on a cradle that hasn't been touched in 20 years and goes, something's out of order. And then he hit it and turned it off. And Wheat goes,
that's pretty much my reaction. Scoots will tell you. I was like, what? It was not. But
that's
she called back.
Making a landline call on a serial killer's house, man.
You know what also was great is that, like, zero fucks were actually given by Sir Scoots. He was just like, oh, man, that kind of sucks. I'm like, are you kidding me? All right. We didn't necessarily get to all the topics, but we're going to bring Goatlust on so we can wrap the show. Jeff's got to, like, get over here. What?
Oh, I thought you were going to bitch about me yelling that we had to have Goatlust on here.
No.
Go Speed
Racer. You got to have Goatlust.
It's appropriate to have Goatlust.
He makes the whole show.
So let's see if I could just do this. I'm just going to say it like I just answered the phone. There we go. Ladies and gentlemen, Goatlust, welcome to Inside the Game. What's up, buddy?
Oh, yeah, no, hold up, mate. How are you?
I'm pretty fucking good, man.
Pretty good, man. How are you?
Oh, sounds excellent. You're bitching about your fucking Americanized piece, mate. You got to come here.
Why?
Have a real fucking treat.
Why? What happens?
Their internet,
oh,
man.
Well, they're just generally a bit shitty over here, and the internet speed's also pretty crap.
Do you have landlines there, Goatlust? Like, I mean, do you even still have a land? Like, do you have a phone in your house, or does everyone just have a cell phone?
People still have phones in their houses, but some people are getting rid of them these days.
Okay. Yeah.
What's it like over there?
Mostly cell phones.
I think my parents
still
do.
Phones all the time, man.
Yeah,
our parents' generation is the last one to have landlines. After that, it'll be nobody, 100%.
Yeah.
It will be nobody.
Yeah. Except for the
it's
except
all going
for red,
that way anyway.
The red phone in the president's office that has a direct
and
line
businesses,
to Putin.
That's like the only people now who have phones. So
that's going to be a cell phone, too. It's going to be a red fucking cell phone.
The red bat
They're
phone.
They're going to have to leave it
in the same
place
iPhone 5. Yeah.
So you got a good question for us this week, Goat Lust.
Oh, it's all right, mate.
Okay. On a scale of 1 to Goat Lust, what is this question rated at?
Oh.
1 being total shit and Goat Lust being fucking amazing.
So is like Llama
probably
Lust.
About a 7 then.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
Alpaca
yeah,
Lust.
Yeah, so back a while ago, when Total Biscuit was running his mouth a bit, about about what's
while,
it called frat houses and shit.
Ah, yeah.
He made a comment that that if the Korean players ever develop a personality, then watch out because you guys are fucked. Do you think there's any sort of truth to this? Is it something you ever worry about that perhaps if the foreigners get pushed out of the scene more or less, or they become less relevant? Then the scene's going to suffer less, suffer as a whole.
Well, obviously,
that's like saying if Destiny gets good at StarCraft.
That's like saying if white guys got good at StarCraft 2, would the Koreans be fucked? Yes, because there'd be no reason to watch them. So,
I mean,
right back at you.
I think to a certain extent, we have seen Korean players that do have personality. If you look at your MC, if you look at your hero, there's players that definitely do have personality. If he's saying as a whole, if their entire culture changes and all of a sudden they're super outgoing and they're participating in all these foreign events, I don't think so. And I don't even think that that's a realistic hypothetical. I think that's just kind of him spouting off at the mouth and not
well,
really
if you looked at
through.
All those Kesper guys, they all at least put in a decent effort at trying to be relatable, at least back in that MLG little
thing. Yeah.
And then you didn't hear about him for like 2 months.
That was like a special one-off thing, too. They were there for an exhibition match. They knew it wasn't like a serious tournament for them. They were definitely better than most of the GSL players are about it. And some of them will be MCs. Like, some of them will have personality, and they will be exciting and relatable. But on the whole, like Taylor kind of nailed it. Like, Koreans just aren't like that. Their culture is not like that. Most of them, especially the gamers, tend to be a little bit introverted, a little bit quieter. They spend all their time playing computer games. They don't grow personalities like that.
I mean, it's a fun hypothetical question, too. So let's look at it this way, by the way. The Koreans that do create a relatable scenario where they're on some level interacting with the non-Korean Western world, I'm thinking of like Violet, certainly MC. Mm-hmm. People know about Polt through kind of what was done at TESPA and a few other tournaments. I mean, those Koreans have bigger streams. They have more of a following. They create the kind of stuff that people bitch about, frankly, about players that don't win tournaments who still have relevancy and are still talked about and are invited to things and are making money and living off of the game that they're not winning every single tournament for.
Yeah.
That should be encouraged. And that's that, you talk about Total Biscuit. I'm excited because I hope he knows this. He has stepped up to the plate for a bunch of stuff that he's already kind of put out there as criticism against other people. And I'm not saying this as a criticism against him. I'm saying this as a good on you because you've got giant balls and you're doing something fucking awesome. I hope he recruits 4 other players than Crank. They want 5. And I hope they prove to the world that teams are not doing enough to market their players and that when they do market their players, they do better for it. And if Total Biscuit can talk the talk and then walk the walk, He deserves every goddamn top hat that he puts on that bald motherfucking head. He deserves every single one of them. And I'll tell you what, I'm excited for it. And I'm not sitting here like a piranha saying if he falls short, you know, there's not going to be a real talk two within Control where I go like, "Hey, yo, that Axiom house, it's fucking frat house, right?" Like, no, I'm not gonna do that. But what I am going to say is that the endeavor is worth it alone, and I hope they succeed. I hope that they prove that you can take Crank and make him relatable to the community, bigger than just Reddit threads excited about his in-game success. I hope his interviews are watched. I hope his stream is watched, and I hope he continues to win, because if they can prove that model,
yeah,
then the spirit behind, like, what if Koreans were as relatable as non-Koreans, would we be fucked? Yeah. That's not possible. But I would like it for people. I would like it if it was possible to be pushed in that direction, because that would be better for everyone. Guess what? Viewership shoots through the fucking roof if at the end of every tournament there's two relatable fucking Koreans there who we both like but are also the best. Because right now, it's a sad fact, but at the end of tournaments, the two best players are usually Korean, and it's one of the most least viewed games of the entire tournament. The final.
Cross your fingers,
how
it's fucking MC.
That? Yeah. How fucked up is that?
Yeah.
How backwards is that? That's wrong.
Goatlust, we do have to wrap up, so thank you once again your call. Appreciate
thanks
it.
A ton.
And we'll see you next week, man.
Later, Goatlust. Yep. Thanks for your question, as always, man.
Yeah, so deal with it, says the Muslim. He's totally deal trolling your thing. Move your head in Control to your right. Move your head to your right. More. There you go. Now just stay like that for the rest of the show.
All 2 minutes of it.
Yeah. All right, let's wrap up. We got to wrap. Let's do final thoughts, final comments. We'll start with you, Pain User.
Please follow me on Twitter. I'm at Pain User. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Thanks, guys, for an excellent show, as always. And stay tuned for the next PhD tournament. We had a huge success with the first Heart of the Swarm tournament, and hopefully we're trying to get things worked out as far as when we're going to host the next one, because there's so many balance changes going down. But when things seem to settle a little bit and the balance is somewhat reasonable, we're definitely going to throw another Heart of the Swarm tournament and see what the new builds are and what everybody's coming up with. So
right on.
Something we've been working on. And then if you want, check out my YouTube, youtube.com/stratbunker. And thanks again, guys. Have a good week.
Thanks, sir. Idra?
Follow me on Twitter at Idrajit, IDRAJIT. Been streaming a lot recently. That should keep up at twitch.tv/EG_Idra. Also, thanks to Team EG and all our sponsors. New title sponsor, Raid Call. Also, Intel, Monster, Steel Series, Kingston HyperX, Beyond Gaming, and Sapphire. Thank you to all of them. And thank you for watching.
Thank you, Greg. Jeff? Should I ask you to wrap up now, or should I wait until Masters Cup is over, since we'll be casting it in about 20 minutes' time?
I'm an attention whore, man.
Go to the right, Jeff. Go to the right. Damn it. God, he snuck another one in there. Jeff, I asked you to do one thing to close out the show. Son of a bitch.
You'd think my fat head would be enough. But it
Sorry,
takes a really big head to block out the ego
of the
of Muslim.
All right.
Big shout out to the sponsor, of course, our title sponsor, Raid Call. But let us not forget all those magical people that make everything possible in esports: Intel, SteelSeries, Kingston HyperX, Monster, Beyond Gaming, Sapphire, and everybody else. We want a big shout out to them as well. I will be commentating the EGMCSL alongside DJ Wheat tonight in about 25 minutes after I swing by GameStop, pick up Dishonored, and another copy of UFO XCOM shit. I am streaming as well. You can see me on Twitch at InControlTV. Follow me on Twitter, EGInControl. And nothing much happening in October, but then in November, all hell breaks loose. All of EG will be going to MLG Dallas. I think most of us anyways, right? All of us?
Good luck, gents.
Tournament's competing with each other, so I can't remember if we're sending people to other stuff as well. But yeah, just a big thank you to everyone. We always have a good audience on Inside the Game. I really appreciate it. And I will see you soon in like 15 minutes.
Yeah, you guys are the best.
Excellent. Thanks, guys. Coming up next, we got the Evil Geniuses Master Cup Series powered by Raycall. We have got Empire taking on Root. We'll be casting that with Ink Control. It's going to somehow teleport right here to this desk next to me. And we'll be doing that. That, of course, being on onemoregame.tv tomorrow. We will have Live on 3. However, we intended to have a representative from each of the teams. It was going to be in the League of Legends World Championship. Since the game's never finished and we don't know who's going to be in the World Championship, that won't happen. But we'll surely hopefully have a guest for you tomorrow. Keep your eyes locked on the Twitters for what's coming up with that. Thank you for tuning in to Inside the Game. And we'll see you next time for another episode. Coming up next is the Evil Genius Master Cup. We're out of here. Peace.
Peace.
Yes.
No, I don't think esports is getting too corporate.
Oh my God, huh? Oh,
my fan base, I mean, our fan base, has definitely grown. But I try to keep a low profile. I definitely don't let it get to me. Is that your real name? Do you know who I am? But of course, I can't speak for everyone. I mean, I'm still me. I'm humble. I'm down to earth. I just get it. I could get used to this. A little higher? There you go. You can ask me anything. I mean, people like working with me. I'm low maintenance. I told you, Colin, when we were on the G6, I won the same one Idra had, but red.
Wait, what?
Red, Colin, red.
Oh, yeah, 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 red.
Hmm. Kingston HyperX is one of the sponsors of Team EG. One of the best. We like to have fun. Thanks. So, contractually, I'm obligated to do some endorsements, but, you know, trust me, I don't enjoy them.
Excuse me, Monsieur Loranger, your car has arrived.
Is it red?
Yes, sir.
Are we good? Can I get you to wrap this up?
Of course.
Thanks.